Hey, Smutters.
Hey, what's happening?
How's your week?
It's been a week.
It has been a week. Whew. I've decided that since it has just been blah, you know? Mm-hmm. That I'm decorating the house for Halloween. It'll make us happy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. And.
Don't be something.
What? Well, I'm at least doing our bedroom. Decorating our bedroom for Halloween. It'll be nice and fun. But. And then next week, I would like to do a Thanksgiving dinner. We're just going to do all the seasons in one.
Huh.
When summer starts. Alrighty. So, we're doing a ghost story tonight.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ghost stories.
Yes. It's a good one.
What's it about?
It's about the first ghost, well, the first and only ghost testimony used in a court case.
Huh?
Yes. It's.
Is that like Exorcism of Emily Rose, where they actually went to court?
Yeah. It kind of is, except they used that. That was a possession case, and this is an actual ghost that they use to put the man away. So it's a very cool case. A friend of mine at work, she was asking me, she was like, what are y'all doing this week? And I kind of told her about it. And she was like, oh, so it took place in the 1800s. And I was like, yeah, it did.
You still need to have like a 2007 ghost.
I know, right? I would love it. It's Britney, bitch. But yes, so that is what we're doing tonight. Have you had anything fun happen or interesting?
No, actually.
No. No. You've been watching the originals, and tonight when we get done with this, we're going to watch the new Ant-Man movie. And y'all, last week when, on our last podcast episode, we were talking about how we had just watched the first Insidious movie. And you were like, hell no, I'm not going to watch this and blah, 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 blah. And then, oh my God, what are you looking at? Stop it. I can't see that.
Look at that.
No, I can't.
Oh my God.
I can't see stuff like that. Ew. Y'all, he is.
Look at that.
No.
Gross.
That's disgusting. Quit.
The whole
no.
Nail. Look at that.
I cannot look at nail stuff. That is so. No. I can handle anything. But like in scary movies, if they put nails under their fingernail and trying to torture them and stuff, I can't do it. He just showed me a video of somebody pulling their toenail off. That's so. Ugh. I can't handle that. No.
Well, your mind just got off a story.
God, that's disgusting. It was their big toe. It wasn't like a small little hangnail. It was their whole big toe toenail. Gross. Okay. Now, let's go back to the story. Are you ready for this?
Are you ready for this? Drop a beat.
I don't have any beats to drop. So,
wow.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, I'm so excited.
Dive on in.
Dive on in. Let's dive on in, y'all. All right. Tonight we are talking about a ghost story. We're also talking about a murder.
Murder.
And just so you know, Troy made some notes too, so we'll have some of his notes to go by also. So,
huh?
you made notes on the story.
I don't know what the story's about.
Well, you did not hesitate to put notes in on my notes. So.
Oh, that kind of stuff.
Yes. as I said, we're talking about a murder.
Not Mutnuck.
Oh my goodness, you already started on this.
What?
I said we're also talking about a murder, and you said with a huge cock and one leg. What? I don't know. It is also the only case in U.S. history where the testimony of a ghost helped convict a murderer in a court of law.
Not Mutnuck.
Tonight, we are talking about the Greenbrier Ghost. Have you ever heard of the Greenbrier Ghost?
The what?
Greenbrier Ghost. Okay. Elva Zona Heaster, or Zona, was born in 1875. Oh, you said she was a siren. Okay. Mm-hmm. in Greenbrier... Why can't I say this? In Greenbrier County, West Virginia.
West Virginia.
Everyone loved her. And her dad was Jacob Heaster, and her mom was Mary Jane Robinson Heaster. They were beets and ant farmers, is what you put. They were just farmers. They traded and sold goods in, the brothel. Seriously, in the town. Mary, what... You did not. Mary was a very honest, hardworking whore. Why? Why do you do this?
Hey, I just end your sentences.
Okay. Mary was a very hardworking, honest, kind, and very religious. Everyone liked the family, and they all attended the Methodist Church. Mary and Zona were very close.
What I say now?
They were best friends and lovers. You know it's mom and daughter, right?
I didn't read the story.
Okay. They were best friends and had such a great relationship. Zona was the second oldest of seven. She had all brothers. And she was very well liked in the town. A good all-around person. Her brothers were very protective of her. And when Zona was 16, she started to get a little bit more freedom and was allowed to go to town with her brothers. So one day, she met a boy named George Wooldridge. They hit it off and started making special trips to town to see each other. They started dating. And in 1895, it turned out that Zona... had gotten pregnant. The kids did not get married. The families weren't really there for it. So George was going to give Zona money from time to time and still be a good daddy. And keep in mind, y'all, this is in the 1800s.
I'll never get that.
And that just wasn't really something you saw. Like, usually if you got pregnant, you were married. So, you know.
See, when I said whore earlier.
She was not. Stop it. So, on November 29th, Zona had a baby boy. But unfortunately, he died shortly after. They buried the child on the farm because the church wouldn't allow a Christian burial because Zona and George were not married. Zona was extremely depressed after losing the baby, and George got married about a year later. After that year, though, Zona started going back into town again, doing her regular things like she used to. And in 1896, she met the new blacksmith in town. His name was Erasmus Trout Shoe.
What?
He had a story for everything. Most of the time, the stories were not true, but Zona fell for it, and she fell hard. They started going more and more to the blacksmith shop, Her parents even said it seemed like they were getting the old Zona back. So her parents went into town and decided to check this blacksmith out. They met him and had heard how great he was and all the stories. But Mary hated Trout the first moment she met him. She saw him flirt with very young girls and found him extremely rude and inappropriate. Mary knew something was off. Trout knew Zona's parents didn't like him very much, and he thrived on it. He loved it. So he told Zona they should elope or run away and get married. And she said, okay.
The best idea ever.
So great. So she went home and packed all of her stuff, and they ran off and got married on October 20th, 1896. After they got married, they came back home and moved into the house that Trout was renting. Everyone found out, and they were not happy about it. It turns out, Zona was 16, 17.
So they didn't have to have...
This was 1800s.
Well, I know, but they still had to have some sort of permission or rights or something at that age back then.
I don't know, because I feel like at that point in time, Zona could have just been like, I'm 18, and they'd be like, okay, that's fine, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, I guess...
women didn't have identification back then.
Yeah, obviously. They didn't have IDs or anything, so, you know. It turns out, though, that Trout wasn't who he pretended to be. Zona's parents were 100% right about him. It turns out, as a child, he was spoiled rotten. His dad taught him the blacksmith trade, and he did very well with it. Trout was known to have a terrible temper, and he loved to tell stories that weren't true. It turns out he was married before to a lady named Allie. As soon as they got married, Trout started to physically and verbally abuse Allie. He cheated a lot, but they did have a daughter named Gertie.
How'd they know this?
Huh?
How'd they know this about Allie?
Oh, because I'm about to get to it. Oh. It's on his criminal record sheet.
They keep them back then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because he gets investigated. But yeah, they had a daughter named Gertie. Where was I? And one night, he decided to come home after being away for a while. And he threw all of Allie and Gertie's things in the yard and told her to take the baby and never come back.
Dick.
Yeah. It did say in some places that Allie was found dead. Trying to basically say that they didn't know how she died, but she was dead. I don't really think they're trying to basically say that Trout did that. And as much as I would love to pin something else on Trout, I don't think he did, because it wasn't very specific. So on to the next one.
Where'd they end up?
Oh, we'll get to it. Where was I? He started to struggle financially. And in 1888, he was arrested for stealing a horse. He spent some time in prison, but while he was locked up, Allie decided she was going to go ahead and divorce him. He never visited Gertie ever again. When he was released, he started doing blacksmith work in the Pocahontas County. In 1894, Trout married a lady named Lucy. In 1895, after a long winter, Trout was on the roof fixing the chimney, throwing bricks down. I bet you can tell where this is going. Lucy came up to give him some water, and she got hit in the head with a brick and died. Sounds legit.
His newest wife?
Yeah, his newest one. Trout was questioned, and no one believed that's how she died, but there were no witnesses, so Trout never got in trouble. When they did the autopsy, it was shown that she had blunt force trauma to the head, and that's what killed her. So, I guess him just tossing that brick off the roof got her.
37 times.
Exactly. 37 times off the roof.
It slipped. 37 times.
He never showed any remorse at all. And he claimed it was okay because his goal in life was to have 7 wives. So, not all together. He just wanted to be married 7 different times.
Isn't that funny how that adds up to the 7 deadliest sins?
Oh my goodness, look at you go. That is pretty awesome. But yes, these are, that they probably would have been 7 deadly sins for Trout. So now we come back to Zona. As soon as they were married, Trout started his shit. If Zona didn't do what he wanted, he would fly into a rage. On January 23rd, Trout said Zona was not feeling very well that day. He said he would walk home for lunch every day and several times a day. I read that so wrong. Let me start that part over. Trout said Zona was not feeling very well that day. Usually, when Trout was at work, he would walk home for lunch. And this was almost an everyday thing. He would walk home for lunch. Even several times a day, he'd head home and just, you know, take a break. But on this day, he never went home. Not even once. Apparently, he went across the street and asked Mr. and Mrs. Jones, a well-known couple in town, if their son could go check on Zona, Andy, since she wasn't feeling very well. They said it was fine. And, you know, Andy did stuff around the town for everybody. If they needed little chores done, he was happy to do them. So Andy, you know, he was happy to go check on Zona, but he said it would be a little bit. He couldn't go do it right away. And the Joneses noticed when Andy wasn't able to go right away, it kind of aggravated Trout. Like, he kept seeing Andy and was like, can you go now? Can you go check on her now? Like, he was in a hurry for this kid to go see if his wife was okay, which, in a normal sense, that would be perfectly fine. But for someone that goes home every single day, several times a day, and doesn't this one day, something's not right.
Right.
You know? So later, when Andy went by the house, he felt like something wasn't right. When he walked to the door, there was a little bit of blood on the stairs. He knocked. No one answered. So he decided to go inside. And this really reminds me, do you remember when we did the Villisca Axe murders and they killed the family in the house and the neighbor went to go knock on the door and nobody answered? And she said there was like a stillness, like the house was so still and so quiet. It was almost eerie, you know? That's kind of what Andy said. But he decided to go inside. And as soon as he walked inside, he saw Zona laying on the floor dead. He checked to see if she was alive, but she was so cold and her eyes were wide open. Andy ran home and told his mom. His mom ran to Trout. Trout went crazy and ran home to Zona. Now, I'm going to stop right there. Trout obviously wanted somebody to find Zona while he was not there, right? Like, sending that kid to go check on her, you know? But can we just talk about what a dick he is for finding a child to go find his dead wife? You know he's going to have trauma for the rest of his life now.
Well, yeah.
I mean, at least get an adult to do it. Andy and Mrs. Jones ran back with Trout. When they got there, Trout told them to go get Dr. Knapp, the town doctor and coroner. The doctor was kind of busy, so he eventually got there about an hour later. But he didn't see anyone when he walked in. So he looked around the house, you know, nobody's there. He, you know, kind of called out, didn't hear anything. So he walks upstairs. Now remember, Zona was found downstairs in the dining room, but he decides to go upstairs. When he got upstairs, he found that Trout had bathed Zona and dressed her in a black veil and a high-collared dress. Hmm. So when the doctor saw her, he declared that she had died of everlasting faint. And back then, the everlasting faint was basically a heart attack. You know, the doctor didn't really get a chance to examine Zona because when he did see her, Trout was holding her, even though he had her in this, you know, lavish black veil and this dress, and he'd already washed her and bathed her and cleaned her up, you know, but he was holding her and wouldn't really let the doctor come near her. Zona thought that she may have been pregnant, and since there were little bits of blood, the doctor came to the same conclusion. So he went back to check, and as I said, Trout wouldn't let him touch her. The doctor wanted to make sure there were no injuries to the head, and again, Trout said, "No, I don't want you to touch her." So the doctor didn't want to upset Trout anymore. Basically, it sounds very awful how the doctor acted, but he also thought that it was a side effect of Trout's grief, pretty much, that, you know, he just didn't want anybody touching his wife. You know what I mean? Because nobody knew Trout's background. They never knew that he flew into rages or anything like that. They just thought he was a grieving husband and just didn't want his wife to be touched. So when her family found out, her mom knew immediately. She knew Trout had murdered her daughter. Eventually, Zona's body was taken to the Heaster farm, and the funeral was the next day. Trout never once left her side. One hand was on her the entire time. He made sure that no one came near her head. And when they started to prepare her body for burial, Trout had to help, meaning he was the only one to touch her. He dressed the body and insisted, this made me laugh because he's such an idiot. He insisted that she wore a big, thick scarf that you wear in cold weather. It was June. Okay. But he said it was her favorite scarf and she always wanted to wear it. So he wrapped it around her neck so she could be buried in it. Hmm. Yeah, that makes sense, right?
Wrapped it around 37 times.
Exactly. The next morning she was buried. Her mother gave her one last kiss on the cheek. And as soon as the grave was filled, Trout gave a quick sigh and left. Not long after, Mary started seeing Zona. Zona would appear to Mary over a course of 4 nights, and she would tell Mary how her husband killed her. After the funeral, Mary was so distraught. Her and Zona had a tight bond. They were mother and daughter, but they were best friends. They did everything together. So, of course, if anything needed to be said, Zona was going to come to Mary. But yes, after the funeral, Mary would sleep in Zona's old room, which I think any mother would do that after losing a child, you know, go sleep in their kid's bedroom just to feel closer to him. The bed that they slept in, you know, you can smell that child on that bed, you know. So I totally get why Zona was in there. She would pray every single night, and her prayer was always the same. She wanted to find the truth on how her daughter died. So one night, while she was praying, Zona appeared. She told her mom the day she died, she didn't feel very well. But she still got ready, because if she didn't, Trout would hurt her. She was so scared of him, but she had to have dinner ready, even though she was feeling bad. She ended up making biscuits and preserves with some fruit on the side. Trout came home and saw the dinner that she made and flew into a rage because Zona didn't make any meat with the dinner. He choked her until blood came out of her mouth. He took all of her little decorations and threw them in a basket and destroyed them. And the way that Zona described it, Zona said, he took all my pretties off the wall and destroyed them. Mm-hmm. Isn't that sad? That's so pitiful. I heard that part in another podcast, and it broke my heart when I heard that. He hit her dress that had blood on it, and she said to check in a field near a fence post. On the last night, when Zona left, before disappearing, she was walking out of the room and stopped and turned her head all the way around to show that her neck was broken, and then she vanished. That's scary as hell right there. Could you imagine somebody is walking off from you, they're back towards you, and then they just stop and turn their head all the way around? That's like The Exorcist, you know it?
Yeah.
But that's so scary. Mary ends up telling her family. You know, she tells her son, she tells her husband, and she only tells him once. And you know what? They all believed her. They knew Mary wasn't going to make up anything. So, her family, you know, they told her, tell our neighbors, tell anyone that'll listen. Because you know what? They'll believe you too. And that's what she did. She went and told all the neighbors and the townspeople. And you know what? They all believed her. Because for them, seeing how Trout was, it wasn't that far-fetched to see that he, or to even think that he would kill Zona, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, Mary would go and tell the story and be like, you know, do you believe me? Absolutely we do, you know? So they were all 100% behind Mary. So Mary went to get a lawyer. She told the lawyer, and she talked to him for hours when she met him. Told him everything. And you know what? The lawyer believed her. He believed every single word that Mary said. The lawyer had the deputies question everyone in the town that knew Trout, that Mary had told. And they even had the deputies question the doctor, Dr. Knapp. So, the doctor was actually kind of happy that they were questioning him. It had been on his mind because it was just an odd situation. So, he was very happy to talk. Dr. Knapp let them know he wasn't able to ever perform an autopsy before she was buried. He was actually intimidated and just kind of wanted to kind of guess what happened because Trout scared him. He was scared if he did anything that, like, that Trout did not want him to do, that he would end up hurt. So he came to the conclusion that Zona died of a heart attack. I mean, it makes sense. I guess you bleed from your mouth when you don't, you know, die from a heart attack. But that's cool.
Yes.
I mean, it happens, right?
Yes.
Maybe. So, they decided Zona needed an autopsy. So, what did they do? The deputies started digging. They found not Zona. They didn't start digging up Zona just quite yet. They started digging about Trout's past. They found everything. They found out about his wives and just how terrible of a human he was. So their next step, they exhumed the body to do the autopsy. Trout lost his mind. He was in a rage. So since he got so mad, the lawyer got a warrant to keep Trout in jail until after the autopsy was performed. Because what the thing was, when something like this is done, they'll usually notify the family members and they can come and watch while this is being done, you know? And, you know, absolutely the family members were going to be there. They wanted answers. Trout was like, no, I'm good. You can go, you know, she doesn't even need to be, you don't have to do that. She's fine. It, you know, it's fine. Don't do it. And the police were like, no, we think you need to come to this. So, what they did was, since he was in jail, on February 22nd, as I said, her body was exhumed and they got to work. They had the doctors, some jurors, and Trout, who was heavily guarded the whole time. But while they were doing the autopsy, the whole time Trout was saying, she fell down the stairs. I know she fell down the stairs. She fell down the stairs. When, you know, Trout never once told them that she fell down the stairs when they came the first time. So, since it was winter, her body was preserved. She wasn't pregnant. They removed the scarf. And as soon as they removed the scarf and the collar of her dress, her head immediately fell over. She also had finger bruises on her neck. They touched her neck and the bones were broken and the windpipe was crushed. They then said she was 100% murder. Trout went crazy. He was arrested on the spot. He went to jail and awaited trial. June 22nd, the trial starts. Mary was brought up to testify. Now, Mary's lawyer did not ask her about her seeing Zona at night and talking to Zona and or anything like that. Just basically because the lawyer didn't want Mary to seem kind of like a crazy person, right?
Yeah.
Like, would you ask her about talking to her dead daughter's spirit and all that in court? No, because they'd be like, oh, she's insane, so we don't need to listen to this. So, the lawyer didn't really ask about it. Like, he kind of danced around it, but guess what?
What?
The defense definitely asked about it. That was their defense on the whole thing. So, I have the questions and answers from the court case. I found it. So we're going to read that. So, the defense lawyer's name was Rucker, okay? So this is Mr. Rucker, and he says, Mrs. Heaster, did you not have a dream that aroused your suspicions to lead you to have the body exhumed? I had no dream, for I was as fully awake as I am this moment. And did you not have a dream or vision that led you to have the body disinterred? Well, I was not satisfied that my daughter came to her death from natural causes, so I prayed that it might be revealed to me how she died. After about an hour spent in prayer, I turned over and there stood my daughter. I put my hand out to feel the coffin, but it was not there. She seemed to hesitate to speak to me, then departed. The next night, after I prayed again, the manner of her death might be shown, she appeared and talked more freely, giving me to understand that I should be acquainted with the whole matter. The third night, she appeared again and disclosed more to me. And on the fourth night, she returned and told me all about the difficulty how it occurred and how it was brought about. Zona Heaster told her mother, "He came that night from the shop and seemed angry. I told him supper was ready and he began to chide me because I had prepared no meat. I replied there was plenty of bread and butter, applesauce, preserves, and other things that made a good supper. He flew into a rage, got up, and came toward me. When I raised up, he seized each side of my head with his hands and by a sudden wrench dislocated my neck." Mrs. Heaster continued the remainder of her answer. Then my daughter went on to describe the moment where she lived and surroundings in the neighborhood so that it was fixed in my mind as a reality. I'm going to stop right there. Mrs. Heaster, because they hated Trout so much, they never saw where Zona lived. So for her to be able to describe this stuff and it be accurate goes to show them that she actually did talk to Zona. Because y'all just remember she had never seen where Zona lived before. So then my daughter went on to describe the home where she lived and surroundings in the neighborhood so that it was fixed in my mind as a reality. When I later described it for people living near there, they told me they could not have been more accurate themselves. And she told me I could look back of Aunt Martha Jones in the meadow in a rocky place, that I could look in the cellar behind a loose plank and see. Her house was a square log house, hewed right up to the square, and she said for me to look at the right-hand side of the door as you go in and in the right-hand corner. I saw the place exactly as she told me, and I saw blood there as she told me. Now, Mrs. Heaster, this sad affair was particularly impressed upon your mind, and there was not a moment during your waking hours that you did not dwell upon it? No, sir, and there is not yet either. And this was not a dream founded upon your distressed condition of mind? No, sir, it was not a dream. I was as awake as I ever was. Then if not a dream or dreams, what do you call it? I prayed to the Lord that she might come back and tell me what had happened. And I prayed that she might come herself and tell on him. Do you think you actually saw your daughter in flesh and blood? Yes, sir, I do. I told them the very dress she was wearing when she was murdered. When she was about to leave the room, she turned her head completely around and looked at me like she wanted me to know all about it. And the next time she returned, she told me all about it. The first time she came, she seemed as if she did not want to tell me as much as afterward. The last night she came, she told me she had done everything she could, and I'm satisfied she did all that too. Now, Mrs. Heaster, don't you know these visions, as you term or describe them, were nothing more or less than four dreams founded upon your distress? No, I don't know it. The Lord sent her to me to tell it. I was the only friend she knew she could tell and put any confidence in. I was the nearest one to her. She gave me a ring he pretended she wanted me to have, but I don't know what dead woman he might have taken it off of. I wanted my daughter's own ring, but he would not let me have it. Mrs. Heaster, are you positively sure they were not four dreams? Yes, sir. They were not dreams. I do not dream when I am awake, to be sure. And I know I saw her right there before me. Are you not considerably superstitious? No, sir, I am not. I was never that way before and am not now. Do you believe in the scripture? Yes, sir, I have no reason not to believe in them. And do you believe the scripture contains the word of God and his son? Yes, sir, I do. Don't you believe it? Now, I would like, if I could, to get you to say these were four dreams and not visions or appearances of your daughter in flesh and blood. If I'm going to say that, I'm going to lie. Then you insist your daughter actually appeared in flesh and blood before you on four different occasions. Yes, sir. She did not have any other conversation with you other than the matter of her death. Yes, sir. Some other little things, some things I've forgotten, just a few words. I just wanted the particulars about her death, and I got them. When she came, did you touch her? Yes, sir. I got up on my elbows, and I reached out a little further, as I wanted to see if people came in their coffins. I leaned up and made a lot. I wanted to see if there was a coffin, but there was not. She was just like she was when she left this world. It was just after I had gone to bed. I wanted her to come talk to me, and she did. This was before the inquest, and I told my neighbors. They said she was exactly as I told them she was. Meaning that the dress that he hid and she described is what she was wearing. Had you ever seen the premises where your daughter lived before these visits? No, sir, I had not, but I found them exactly as she told me they were and never laid eyes on them after her death. She told me all of this before I knew anything about the building at all. How long was it after you had those interviews with your daughter until you did see the buildings? It must have been a month or more after the examination. You said your daughter told you that down by the fence in a rocky place you would find something. She said for me to look there, but she didn't say I would find anything, just for me to look there. Did she tell you what to look for? No, sir, she did not. I was so glad to see her, I forgot to ask. Have you examined the place since? Yes, sir. We looked at the fence a little, but we didn't find anything. She spent nearly an entire day on the witness stand seeking to build a defense for himself. He talked at great length and was very minute and particular in describing unimportant events, but denied practically everything testified to by the other witnesses. He entered a positive denial of the charge against him, terming the prosecution spite work. In closing, he protested his innocence, calling on God to witness. Though admitted he had served a term in the penitentiary, he declared he loved his late wife dearly and appealed to members of the jury to look into his eyes and then say if he was guilty. But this man's testimony and his desperate efforts failed to sway the jury, but it did make a most unfavorable impression. So great did the state's case appear against him that Mr. Dennis, editor of the Greenbrier Independent, wrote in this paper, "There is no middle ground for the jury to take. The verdict inevitably must be for murder in the first degree or for an acquittal." After lengthy arguments of the evidence by the counsel for both the state and the defendant, Shue's case was given to the jury. This body solemnly filed from the room to perform their duty, returning in 1 hour with a verdict of the murder in first degree, but recommending life imprisonment.
Damn.
After the verdict had been announced, Mr. Dennis again wrote in this paper, "Taking the verdict of the jury as ascertaining the truth, we must conclude that Shue deliberately broke his wife's neck, probably with his strong hands, and with no other motive than to be rid of her so that he might get another one more to his liking." He just didn't like her that much, is what he's saying.
Doesn't
seem like it. The 12-man jury and many spectators in the courtroom did not see eye to eye in regards to a proper verdict. Many persons not connected with the trial expressing the opinion that the death penalty should have been imposed. Rumors of mob violence grew. Sentiment crystallized, and on the Sunday following Shue's conviction, a small mob gathered at Meadow Bluff Campgrounds to take the prisoner from his cell in the county jail and hang him. Shue's fate, the mob decreed, should be the same he had judged and carried out for his innocent wife, death by a broken neck. At 10 o'clock, they gathered at their rendezvous 8 miles from Lewisburg. One man, however, decided his neighbors were making a terrible mistake. He was George M. Hara. Hearing of the plan, Hara mounted his horse and hurried to the house of Sheriff Nickel at Meadow Bluff. Both men started for Lewisburg to protect the prisoner, but to reach there had to pass the campgrounds. Somebody in the mob recognized the sheriff as he sped down the road past the grounds on his horse. Several would-be lynchers gave chase. They captured the two men at the point of pistols. Sheriff Nickel drew his gun and was about to fire despite overwhelming odds when he recognized his assailant. Deciding to kill the gunman, even at the cost of his own life, the sheriff tried moral persuasion. Mob leaders went with him to the nearby home of a D.A. Dwyer. There, after considerable argument, Sheriff Nickel won his point. The mob disbanded, giving him the new, stout rope with which they had planned to carry out the hanging of Shue. 2 days elapsed before Shue was removed to Moundsville Penitentiary to serve the remainder of his life. He died 8 years later.
From what?
It didn't say. And that is how a ghost put a murderer in jail. What did you think? I didn't mean to ignore you, but like while I was reading, Troy like showed me a little note. He goes, "Where's the supernatural part in this?" And it was, yeah, it was her daughter coming to visit her and tell her everything that happened. And I found it so fascinating that she could name and describe places that she'd never seen because Zona had told her about it. And she was spot on. Like, people that had actually seen these places were saying, you know, we couldn't have described them any better. So, yes, everybody was behind Mary. They all believed her that Zona was coming to her and telling her everything that happened. And she put Trout away. And she, you know, she got justice for his ex-wife as well, because that, you know, that came to light too, because nobody in the town knew about it. He hid that, passed away. So all of that came to light. And, you know, of course, he was only tried for one of them, but everybody knew. And I think he was pretty much brought to justice. Spent his whole life in jail. And also, y'all, back then in the 1800s, going to jail, oh my God. I mean, it's not great now, I guess, but I'm sure it was a lot worse then, you know?
Yeah.
So, isn't that where they had to, like, take, like, shovels or something and hit rocks or whatever? Isn't that what they did?
I think hammers.
Or hammers. Like, that's what they do in, like, the old movies. They always have them chained together, hitting rocks. Like
that Cartman thing that I mentioned the other night.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that anymore. But I was thinking of that movie that has Bernie Mac in it. And what's it called?
Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy. But, yeah, they do that. And, yeah, I really love this story. I think it's fascinating. And I think it helps you believe a little bit more. And I feel like Mary was not a liar at all. Like, that defense attorney tried to break her and even begged her, please just admit that you were dreaming. And she's like, I can't do that because I wasn't. And he's like, but you're going to say that you were dreaming. And she's like, no, I'm not. So I love it, and it's such a great story. Did you like it? Yeah? All right. Well, that is the story for tonight.
And we're sticking to it.
I will post pictures of Zona and Trout on Instagram. I've got a few. And you can see what they look like. It's so funny seeing pictures from the 1800s. How people just look back then. Because, like, I've got several pictures of Zona, and she looks like a totally different person in each of them. But just, you know, their fashion and stuff like that. And it just, I love seeing old pictures like that. So definitely be sure to check Instagram at Supernatural Smut Podcast, so you can get the visuals and see who all we're talking about. And I'll try to find a picture of Mary as well, as if I can. But we do have one of Zona and Trout for sure. So I think we're good.
Good deal.
All right. Everybody, drink lots of water and make good choices. Anything?
I'm good.
You good? All right. Thanks.
Carmen, bro.
Perfect. Thanks for listening, y'all. And we will see you next Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.